Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Today we'll be test talking with Derek Bailey, a software developer and founder of WatchMeCode.net, a community dedicated to learning JavaScript, Node.js, RabbitMQ, and more. He's also one of the co-hosts of my favorite podcast, Entreprogrammers. So in this episode, we'll be talking all about testing JavaScript and RabbitMQ applications from a developer's perspective. So if you're either a developer or tester and need to get up to speed fast with JavaScript, this episode is for you. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Derek, welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, thanks for having me here. It's great to be on the show.
Awesome. It's great to have you on the show. I'm a big fan of your podcast, Entreprogrammers, which is really the only can't-miss podcast I listen to. But, you know, today I'd like to talk about JavaScript and RabbitMQ and how you go about testing code from a developer's perspective. But I guess before we get into it, could you just tell us a little bit more about how you actually got into software development? And I think as I was stalking you, you may have started off as a Ruby programmer. Why did you switch to JavaScript?
Well, if you want the real origin story, it goes all the way back to 1988. And my first computer was actually a Commodore 64, and I learned how to program that using Commodore 64 BASIC. My mom found a book at a garage sale for 50 cents and brought it home. And it was kind of love at first bite at that point. And it just kind of ran from there. So my experience in Ruby was well into my career as well. I spent 10 years almost in .NET prior to doing Ruby, and I had spent a fair number of years doing other environments and languages prior to .NET. But from Ruby into JavaScript, that was, 2010, 2011 era. I had just become a independent contractor for the very first time. I'd done a lot of contracting work prior, but this was my first time doing it independently. And my coworker and I, a guy by the name of Joey Benninghove, he and I were tired of writing garbage JavaScript with jQuery. We just couldn't get our heads wrapped around writing well-structured code in the browser. And so he spent a week looking for something good to use in the browser and came back with Backbone.js. And I immediately fell in love with it, recognizing a lot of the same kinds of patterns that I had built in Windows apps inside of the browser at that point. So we ran with it, and I fell in love with it, and I started blogging about it. And eventually, I had enough traffic from Stack Overflow questions and my blog that people were coming to me asking me to do work for them. And so I transitioned from full-time Ruby developer who happened to do JavaScript to full-time JavaScript developer that happened to do Ruby. And now at this point, it's just full-time JavaScript all around, Node.js, browser-based. You know, everywhere I can get my hands on JavaScript, I'm writing JavaScript.
Awesome. So now you're pretty much an independent, on your own, developer nor. And you know, you had a thing called Signal Leaf at one point. So you've really done hardcore development on your own almost. You're not necessarily part of a group. So I know a lot of companies, they really try to force TDD on their developers. And I'm just wondering to know, like, as an independent developer, as you're doing all this hardcore development, do you still use TDD on your own? Or what approaches do you use to actually test the code that you're creating for both your courses and also for your actual applications that you're creating?
Whenever possible, I do take a test-driven approach to my code. But it's been unfortunate in the last 5 or 6 years or so that I have not taken the time to really learn some of the more modern and integrated test systems that are available out there. For example, the last time I did full stack integration testing with the server and browser was in my Ruby days back in 2010 using Cucumber and Capybara and the Selenium WebDriver at that point. And I've done some integration testing in JavaScript and Node, but the majority of the testing that I do these days is really the business logic side of things. I find it a lot easier to deal with that side of testing, where I get the critical process, in one case, the horrendous math I had to do around insurance calculations and all of the edge cases around that. And in a few systems, for my one client that I do have at this point, I do have a pretty good test suite around behaviors that center around messaging and dealing with scheduling of processes. But I don't always get to do test-driven development the way I want to. And a big part of that is because I have lapsed in my skill set for using full integration test suites in the JavaScript world. So I do try to test as much as possible, but it's not always something that I get to do.
Gotcha. Now, I know that you have some videos on YouTube, and one of them you actually have on Jasmine. Mm-hmm. So more unit-based integration type tests is probably what you've probably been doing more of. So one reason why I really wanted you to have you on the show is to get a developer's perspective, because in the automation world, there's a lot of JavaScript framework usage in the test automation space.
Right.
And so they have like Jasmine, Mocha, Nightwatch MS, Phantom.js, they have all these JS's things. So do you use any of these libraries, or is it basically just Jasmine? You know, of those libraries that are available, what do you use for your unit level type testing?
For unit testing, I still use Jasmine. I've been a big fan of it for a good number of years now. It's not the most up-to-date framework out there. I know Mocha and Tape and a few others do push forward faster and more frequently, but I'm not so interested in staying on the cutting edge or even the leading edge of the testing world. I'm more interested in long-term stability and support, which I find in Jasmine. I've kind of stuck with it because of its simplicity as well. My experience with Mocha, well, it was a few years ago, but it was more like, okay, here's one piece of your test suite that you installed, and it's called Mocha. Oh, and you wanted to actually do some assertions? Well, now you need to go get this piece of your test suite. Oh, and you wanted to use a specific format for your test suite? Well, now you need to go get that piece of your test suite. And it just got frustrating having to piece together the different things just to run a test, whereas Jasmine is like, oh, here's Jasmine. It can do everything you need. Doesn't do all of it super well, and there are additional things you can add on to it to make it work better. But from a very basic standpoint, get it installed and get it running, Jasmine is still my go-to tool for its simplicity and getting things up and running.
Awesome. Now, for the person that may not be used to testing JavaScript, for some reason, I just find it, I don't know why, I don't like the syntax, but maybe it's just because I'm not used to it. Mm-hmm. How does one, do you have any tips on how someone can learn JavaScript better? Because I'm sure a lot of testers out there, because more and more of these frameworks are using JavaScript, they're going to want to learn JavaScript better. So do you have any tips for beginners on JavaScript?
If you can, don't learn JavaScript testing in a browser, because it can be deceptively simple there. You start messing with Jasmine, for example, and you use the in-browser test runner, and oh, it's great because I can see the wonderful red-green dots on the screen and click through things. But then you try to put it into an automation environment and it falls apart because you don't have a browser. And then you have to get into Phantom.js and other headless browsers that tend to get complicated quickly. So for me, if I were going to suggest a way for somebody to start testing JavaScript, I'd pick up Node.js first. Because you're already running in a server in a, quote, headless environment where you don't have a user interface to click through. Just run a few simple tests in Node, get the basics of testing down pat in Node to where you can write a test, see it running in your command line, but also run the automation. And then once you've got the gist of that, if you really are focused on browsers and browser-based code and testing, then you can switch over to Jasmine in a browser environment and setting up Phantom.js and getting the automation from that perspective in place.
Awesome. Great advice. So you do have a screencast series called Watch Me Code. Is that something you think a tester could learn from if they're starting from JavaScript from scratch? Or what's your core audience for Watch Me Code?
So my core audience there is developers that are familiar with and productive in JavaScript, but want to go to the next level, want to really dig deep into the language, but also into well-structured and well-architected systems, primarily in Node, but also in the browser. I do have a fair number of testing screencasts in there covering Jasmine in different scenarios, everything from way back in the day running tests around Backbone.js to more up-to-date stuff with an intro to Jasmine testing as well. So there is plenty of material there for somebody that already knows JavaScript and just needs to learn the testing side. But the testing aspect is something that I haven't covered enough in Watch Me Code, and that's something that I know I need to focus on this year and write a better series of tests. I've been planning that for this year, actually, to produce a series around testing Node.js specifically, starting from the ground up and building a module in a test-driven fashion and eventually publishing it to NPM so that other people can, you know, install it and use it and run the tests themselves.
So, Derek, I know you're also starting to get more involved in YouTube. You've been posting fairly regularly there. And I think you have a few recent videos that have really caught my attention. And the first one is you talk about the secret of building large JavaScript applications. And then you mentioned something about you really need to develop your code to be testable. Now, for some reason, I think a lot of developers don't think about testability as they're developing code. So can you explain a little bit more what you mean by make your code testable?
The idea is, if you want to write test automation for your code, you need to be able to separate the individual pieces. You need to be able to take this one function, this one class, this one object, this one whatever, and completely separate it from anything else in your system so that you can verify the behavior of this one thing. And once you have behavior verified of the one thing, then you can start putting it together with other things that have been tested as well. And you start integrating those things together and verify the interaction between those two things. And then you build upon it from there. And this ties directly into that YouTube video about building large-scale applications. And the secret, as I said in that video, is to build small things that can be composed into larger things. And the best way to build small things is to have a good test suite around the small things so that when you compose them into the bigger things, you have to write less tests on the bigger thing first off. But it's also easier to test the bigger thing because you have guarantees about how the smaller things work already.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree with that approach. And so I guess along those lines, if someone's a tester and they're technically aware, they know some JavaScript, do you have any recommendations of how they can speak with the developer that maybe isn't test-centric or test-aware to maybe start a dialogue with them for any pointers, how testers maybe can interact with developers in a positive way?
That's a struggle that I never quite solved in my career as a developer with other companies. So in this one project, I had the pleasure and responsibility of being tech lead for a given project, and I was able to use my influence to get the full team, including the testers and designers and everybody, into the same room. And in that particular project, I made it a policy to always have everyone on the team involved in design decisions. You know, when it came down to code design, well, the designers don't really care about code design. The testers do, though, because they often have to write tests that interact with the way the code works and the way the code is designed. But whenever possible, I made sure everybody in the room, everybody on the team was involved in the discussions because it led to a better understanding, a better set of questions, and just a better way forward. So if at all possible, I would recommend doing that. I would recommend having the testers in the same room as the developers and having the testers and developers involved in the same conversations because ultimately the testers have to understand what they are testing, and the developers have to understand what is being tested as well as what is being developed. So it's necessary to have everybody talking and everybody on the same page.
Awesome. You know, it's kind of funny. It's always like a non-technical seems to be fixed for a lot of things. And it's the most difficult thing, collaboration and communication, especially if you're on teams that are spread out across the world. So I definitely agree with you. Sometimes people ignore what seems easy because it's the hardest thing. So exactly.
Yeah. My general philosophy on software development is that there are no technical issues anymore. There are only human issues at this point in time. I mean, yeah, okay, you're going to run into bugs and this framework's going to be wonky and whatnot, but even those often come down to human issues, because those crazy frameworks that have weird APIs, well, those were developed by humans. So there's generally very few technical problems. And if you can focus on the human side of things and really getting collaboration and deep and meaningful relationships within your team built up, then you're going to have a much better time with your technical experience than otherwise.
Awesome. Great advice. So I'd like to switch gears really quick here and go over to now RabbitMQ. Mm-hmm. I noticed you have a lot of material on RabbitMQ. I guess at a high level, what is RabbitMQ?
So RabbitMQ is a message broker. And what that really means is it's a centralized messaging service. You publish a message to RabbitMQ. It stores the message in a queue somewhere, and some other code comes along and picks up the message out of the queue. Think of it like email or even physical mail, where you can send an email to somebody's inbox. You send it through a bunch of services and networks and whatnot, and it sits there in their inbox until that person decides to read it. Well, RabbitMQ works in kind of the same way. Instead of an email, you format a specific message using something that the other end will be able to understand, like a JSON document or an XML document or a CSV or whatever it is. And you send that as a message through RabbitMQ, which gets put into a queue, which is essentially the inbox. And then some additional code on the other side picks up that message when it can, processes the data, does whatever it needs, and then maybe it just deletes the message and says it's done, or maybe it sends a response back or kicks off some additional processes or whatever it is. But the intention and the goal of a messaging service like that is to decouple long-running processes and intensive processes and processes that need to run on different servers somewhere else. It's just a way to create an architecture that runs distributed across your network, or, you know, sometimes even on the same physical machine, but just in a background process.
Because it's not a front-end type technology, how would you recommend someone test this? I think a lot of people struggle with, from a testing perspective, they always think end-to-end testing.
Right.
So how do you, and especially with asynchronous type messages going on, how do you approach testing your RabbitMQ backends that you're putting together?
There's a couple of different aspects to it, really. And it does get to be quite challenging at times on all fronts. I mean, you have this large system that is running across multiple physical machines or logical machines, or however you set up your application. And you need to make sure that all of it works together. But you can't necessarily test the full thing end-to-end in an automated way. You know, maybe you can if you put some extensively long delays, or if you have some process to notify the test suite that the backend code is done and it can go check things. But that can get difficult and can cause a lot more architecture and code just for the test suite, which you kind of want to avoid. You don't want to write code just for testing. You want to write code that is testable but doesn't do any more than it really needs. And so what it comes down to often is breaking these things down into smaller pieces and testing the individual pieces, like I said before. But what that means with RabbitMQ and other distributed systems is separating the actual communication mechanism from the data and messages that are being communicated. So if you're writing a framework that is sitting on top of RabbitMQ directly, which I have a small Node.js framework called Rabbis, the RabbitMQ service bus. When I write code and tests for Rabbis, I have to interact with RabbitMQ directly. So I have to put in place both a publisher and a subscriber of these messages in order to make sure the messages are going through appropriately. There is a necessary amount of interaction in RabbitMQ, and actually having RabbitMQ set up and running and able to deliver my messages. But I'm isolating that down into this library that I control, the library that I build, so that I don't have to do that in my real application development. In my real applications, I don't test the interaction with RabbitMQ. I test the interaction with an API where the API implementation will know about RabbitMQ. But in the actual application, instead of checking to make sure that I'm really sending a message across RabbitMQ, I check to make sure that the API to send the message received the message that it expected. It's the part where we start ripping things apart at the seams. We start building API definitions and interfaces, programmatic interfaces and APIs, so that we can isolate the real network interaction from the code that needs to use it.
I think I'm following. So an API interface to, so you can speak to the API rather than speak directly to RabbitMQ.
Exactly. So for example, I have a scheduler system that I built for my client, and it needs to tell an agent, which is a service worker somewhere else, a process on another box, needs to tell an agent to go do a job. Well, when I test the code that publishes the request for the job to be done, I don't test to make sure that the actual agent code is doing the work now. I test the send job request API. So I have an object called, you know, job request sender or whatever it is. And I make sure that my scheduler object calls the job request sender dot send method. And I do that with a mock object. I make sure that I can inject a mock object into the scheduler at test time so that the scheduler can call the mock job request sender. And then I verify that job request sender had its send method called in my assertions. So the real challenge there, when you start looking at testing the individual pieces, is making sure that everything actually does work together as a whole. There's a great GIF that I've seen running around where it says something to the effect of all the tests passed, ship it. And what you see in this GIF is a picture of a foam alphabet board, like a child's toy, like a two or three-year-old's child's toy. And in this picture of this of these foam letters, you can see that the letter D has been crammed into where the G is supposed to go, and the Z is crammed into where the M is supposed to go, and the I is crammed into where the H is supposed to go. And there's all these letters in the wrong place, but they all technically fit because they were bent and warped and mashed in so that they look like they fit. And you have to make sure that your unit tests are not looking like that when you get to the system as a whole. And the way we do that with larger systems and distributed systems, when we start tearing apart the seams and just testing the API interactions, is to have better documentation. When you know that you're going to be sending a message across RabbitMQ, you don't test RabbitMQ's ability to send a message. You test the ability for the message producer to send the right message and the message consumer to handle the message appropriately. And in order to do that, you need to have a well-documented message format, something that can be verified on both ends to make sure you are sending the same message that the consumer expects to receive so that the consumer will be able to handle it appropriately.
Awesome. And maybe I'm wrong. What I love about this concept, it's almost like, once again, you're making your code testable by providing an API that you can interact with without going into the guts of RabbitMQ.
Exactly.
And what I love about this approach also is a lot of times people are so focused on end-to-end testing. Mm-hmm. So in the end, when you try to build and you deploy it to a continuous integration environment, it takes 8 to 10 hours because you have end-to-end tests because you're not testing at the API level, you're testing at the browser level, because no one ever thought about testability by creating an API that would allow you to go directly to the API that would be quicker and faster and better than using just an end-to-end test that probably would miss some of this.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's never a one-size-fits-all situation. I mean, I write a lot of unit tests, a lot of isolation tests where I rip things apart and inject my mocks and verify the behaviors and interactions on those mocks. But there is always a point at which I can no longer do that, and I have to put in place some kind of interaction and end-to-end test. And when it comes to writing a route handler inside of Express.js, inside of my web server in Node, you know, at some point I need to be able to take, I think it's called Super Agent or Super Test, one of those two. I need to take that testing library to stand up a real instance of my Express server and handle the actual interaction and produce the HTML. So there will come a point at which isolation testing and unit testing is no longer sufficient, and you need to go integration testing and end-to-end testing. But you can't rely on end-to-end testing or integration testing for your one and only place to be either. You need to have a good balance between both. And finding that balance is a constant challenge and will be it'll look different on every project that you work in.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. It's all about risk to me.
And yeah, so, definitely.
And I spoke with someone, I brought this up a few times, where they had actually, they claimed to have 100% test coverage, mm-hmm. and the application still failed because in the end, the customer didn't even want what they created. So yeah, it's a good point. Focus on risk, and it's different per company. It's not one size fits all, but it's all this, what is the right combination or the right portfolio of different percentages of tests that we should run for our particular situation.
Right.
Awesome. Now, for RabbitMQ, once again, I believe you handle this and watch me code, but are there any other resources that you have for people that may want to learn more about RabbitMQ? And do you actually cover this API type approach that you just explained?
I do have a good series on RabbitMQ for Node.js developers, which you can find at rabbitmqfordevs.com, either the number four or the word four, either one works. That is really an introduction to RabbitMQ and how to work with it. It covers installation and basic management and configuration, sending messages, and then getting into the Node.js side of things, including a lot of the common patterns of usage. It doesn't cover testing RabbitMQ or testing code that uses RabbitMQ. That's a more advanced topic that didn't make it into that series. It would have added another 3 or 4 hours of videos and interviews on top of what's already 3 or 4 hours of videos and interviews.
Do you have any suggestions for monitoring or learning solutions that you use to test your JavaScript in production? I know most people are used to unit testing and end-to-end testing, mm-hmm. but I'm seeing more and more companies do the shift right where once they deliver it to the customer now, they're being a little more proactive. So any suggestions on actually monitoring your applications in production to help catch issues before your customers face them?
Yeah, I've been using raygun.io to monitor application errors in production for many years now. I really like what Raygun provides, the service that they offer. There's a ton of great services out there to capture errors and log those errors for you. But I've been with Raygun forever. They've been a phenomenal company and continue to provide phenomenal support. And one of the reasons I like them particularly is their deep integration with a lot of different languages and environments. I can put a Raygun client inside of a browser and capture browser errors. And anytime a browser throws an error, it'll email me and tell me, hey, there's an error inside this user's browser. It's this browser. It's this page. It's this stack trace. It happened at this line of code. And it allows me to be very proactive about solving problems in production, but it also integrates very well with Node.js and Express.js. It's really easy to set up one global error handler in Express and have it log all errors to Raygun.io, which I do quite frequently as well. And I, again, am able to be more proactive about finding bugs on the server side of things and getting things fixed before customers even realize there's problems.
Okay, Derek, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to help improve their JavaScript testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
One thing to do, boy, it's just going to be practice. Just hands down, that is the single best thing you can do is practice. And the best way to practice is to create throwaway projects that are designed to do nothing but let you practice. I do this with every aspect of development, no matter what tools or technology I'm using. If I need to get better at something, I throw all of my actual project code to the side. I stand up a dummy project that is nothing but practice for that tool or technology, and I just pound away at it for as long as I can or until I feel comfortable enough to go back to my real production code and put it in place.
Great advice. And Derek, the best way to find or contact you?
Best way is at derekbailey.com. You can get all my links to everything from there. You find my Twitter, links to Watch Me Code, all of my ebooks and screencasts and everything else are all going to be linked from derekbailey.com.
Thank you, Derek, for your JavaScript RabbitMQ testing awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/106. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker by sending them over to testtalks.com or sharing our free Test Talks app for both iOS and Android devices. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.